Part 2, The Sieve and the Sand. They read the long afternoon through while the cold November rain fell from the sky upon the quiet house. They sat in the hall because the parlor was so empty and gray-looking without its wall lit with orange and yellow confetti and skyrockets, and women in gold mesh dresses and men in black velvet pulling 100-pound rabbits from silver hats. The parlor was dead, and Mildred kept peering in at it with a blank expression as Montag paced the floor and came back and squatted down and read a page as many as 10 times aloud. We cannot tell the precise moment when friendship is formed. As in filling a vessel drop by drop, there is at last a drop which makes it run over. So, in a series of kindnesses, there is at last one which makes the heart run over. Montag sat listening to the rain. Is that what it was in the girl next door? I've tried so hard to figure. She's dead! Let's talk about someone alive, for goodness sake! Montag did not look back at his wife as he went trembling along the hall to the kitchen, where he stood a long time watching the rain hit the windows before he came back down the hall in the gray light, waiting for the tremble to subside. He opened another book. That favorite subject, myself. He squinted at the wall. That favorite subject, myself. I understand that one, said Mildred. But Clarice's favorite subject wasn't herself. It was everyone else and me. She was the first person in a good many years I really liked. She was the first person I can remember who looked straight at me as if I counted. He lifted the two books. These men have been dead a long time, but I know their words point one way or another to Clarice. Outside the front door in the rain, a faint scratching. Montag froze. He saw Mildred thrust herself back to the wall and gasp. Someone, the door, why doesn't the door voice tell us? I shut it off. Under the door sill, a slow, probing sniff, an exhalation of electric steam. Mildred laughed. It's only a dog, that's what. You want me to shoo him away? Stay where you are. Silence, the cold rain falling, and the smell of blue electricity blowing under the locked door. Let's get back to work, said Montag quietly. Mildred kicked at a book. Books aren't people. You read and I look all around, but there isn't anybody. He stared at the parlor that was dead and gray as the waters of an ocean that might teem with life if they switched on the electronic sun. Now, said Mildred, my family is people. They tell me things. I laugh, they laugh. And the colors! Yes, I know. And besides, if Captain Beatty knew about these books, she thought about it. Her face grew amazed and then horrified. He might come and burn the house and the family. That's awful. Think of our investment. Why should I read? What for? What for? Why? Said Montag. I saw the damnedest snake in the world the other night. It was dead, but it was alive. It could see, but it couldn't see. You want to see that snake? It's at emergency hospital, where they filed a report on all the junk the snake got out of you. Would you like to go and check their file? Maybe you'd look under Guy Montag, or maybe under fear or war. Would you like to go to that house that burnt last night and rake ashes for the bones of the woman who set fire to her own house? What about Clarice McLellan? Where do we look for her? The morgue? Listen. The bombers crossed the sky and crossed the sky over the house, gasping, murmuring, whistling like an immense invisible fan, circling in emptiness. Jesus God, said Montag. Every hour so many damn things in the sky. How in hell did those bombers get up there every single second of our lives? Why doesn't someone want to talk about it? We've started and won 2 atomic wars since 1990. Is it because we're having so much fun at home we've forgotten the world? Is it because we're so rich and the rest of the world's so poor and we just don't care if they are? I've heard rumors the world is starving, but we're well fed. Is it true? The world works hard and we play? Is that why we're hated so much? I've heard the rumors about hate, too, once in a long while over the years. Do you know why? I don't. That's sure. Maybe the books can get us half out of the cave. They just might stop us from making the same damn insane mistakes. I don't hear those idiot bastards in your parlor talking about it. God, Millie, don't you see? An hour a day, 2 hours with these books, and maybe... The telephone rang. Mildred snatched the phone. Anne, she laughed. Yes, the white clown's on tonight. Montag walked to the kitchen and threw the book down. Montag, he said, you're really stupid. Where do we go from here? Do we turn the books in, forget it? He opened the book to read over Mildred's laughter. Poor Millie, he thought. Poor Montag. It's mud to you, too. But where do you get help? Where do you find a teacher this late? Hold on. He shut his eyes. Yes, of course. Again he found himself thinking of the Green Park a year ago. The thought had been with him many times recently, but now he remembered how it was that day in the city park when he had seen that old man in the black suit hide something quickly in his coat. The old man leapt up as if to run, and Montag said, "Wait! I haven't done anything!" cried the old man, trembling. "No one said you did." They had sat in the green soft light without saying a word for a moment, and then Montag talked about the weather, and then the old man responded with a pale voice. It was a strange, quiet meeting. The old man admitted to being a retired English professor, who had been thrown out upon the world 40 years ago when the last liberal arts college shut for lack of students and patronage. His name was Faber, and when he finally lost his fear of Montag, he talked in a cadenced voice, looking at the sky and the trees and the green park, and when an hour had passed he said something to Montag, and Montag sensed it was a rhymeless poem. Then the old man grew even more courageous and said something else, and that was a poem, too. Faber held his hand over his left coat pocket and spoke these words gently, and Montag knew if he reached out he might pull a book of poetry from the man's coat. But he did not reach out. His hands stayed on his knees, numbed and useless. "I don't talk things, sir," said Faber. "I talk the meaning of things. I sit here and know I'm alive." That was all there was to it, really. An hour of monologue, a poem, a comment, and then, without either acknowledging the fact that Montag was a fireman, Faber, with a certain trembling, wrote his address on a slip of paper. "For your file," he said, "in case you decide to be angry with me." "I'm not angry," said Montag, surprised. Mildred shrieked with laughter in the hall. Montag went to his bedroom closet and flipped through his file wallet to the heading "Future Investigations?" ? Faber's name was there. He hadn't turned it in, and he hadn't erased it. He dialed the call on a secondary phone. The phone on the far end of the line called Faber's name a dozen times before the professor answered in a faint voice. Montag identified himself and was met with a lengthy silence. "Yes, Mr. Montag?" "Professor Faber, I have a rather odd question to ask. How many copies of the Bible are left in this country?" "I don't know what you're talking about. I want to know if there are any copies left at all. This is some sort of a trap. I can't talk to just anyone on the phone." "How many copies of Shakespeare and Plato?" "None, you know as well as I do, none." Faber hung up. Montag put down the phone. None. A thing he knew, of course, from the firehouse listings, but somehow he'd wanted to hear it from Faber himself. In the hall, Mildred's face was suffused with excitement. "Well, the ladies are coming over!" Montag showed her a book. "This is the Old and New Testament. Don't start that again. It might be the last copy in this part of the world. You've got to hand it back tonight, don't you? Captain Beatty knows you got it, doesn't he?" "I don't think he knows which book I stole. But how do I choose a substitute? Do I turn in Mr. Jefferson, Mr. Thoreau? Which is least valuable? If I pick a substitute, and Beatty does know which book I stole, he'll guess we've an entire library here." Mildred's mouth twitched. "See what you're doing? You'll ruin us. Who's more important, me or that Bible?" She was beginning to shriek now, sitting there like a wax doll, melting in its own heat. He could hear Beatty's voice. "Sit down, Montag. Watch. Delicately, like the petals of a flower, light the first page, light the second page. Each becomes a black butterfly. Beautiful, eh? Light the third page from the second, and so on, chain-smoking, chapter by chapter, all the silly things the words mean, all the false promises, all the second-hand notions and time-worn philosophies." There sat Beatty, perspiring gently, the floor littered with swarms of black moths that had died in a single storm. Mildred stopped screaming as quickly as she started. Montag was not listening. "There's only one thing to do," he said. "Sometime before tonight, when I give the book to Beatty, I've got to have a duplicate made." "You'll be here for the White Cloud tonight, and the ladies coming over?" cried Mildred. Montag stopped at the door with his back turned. "Millie?" A silence. "What?" "Millie, does the White Clown love you?" No answer. "Millie, does—" He licked his lips. "Does your family love you? Love you very much? Love you with all their heart and soul, Millie?" He felt her blinking slowly at the back of his neck. "Why'd you ask a silly question like that?" He felt he wanted to cry, but nothing would happen to his eyes or his mouth. "If you see that dog outside," said Mildred, "give him a kick for me." He hesitated, listening at the door. He opened it and stepped out. The rain had stopped, and the sun was setting in the clear sky. The street and the lawn and the porch were empty. He let his breath go in a great sigh. He slammed the door.